forum for frank talk about what people do for a living. Works do.
Hello, and welcome to Work Stew. It's December 13th, 2013, and this is episode number 73. I'm Kate Gase-Walton. I'm the editor of Work Stew, an online collection of essays and interviews in which people ponder their work lives. In this episode, I speak with Tess Poe, the founder of Beehive Sewing Studio and Workspace in Northampton, Massachusetts. Tess and I talked at length, starting with her earlier career in advocacy and moving to her later jobs with various government entities and nonprofits. But in the interest of time, this recording begins when I asked Tess about how she started Beehive. The chapter that intrigues me the most, I will confess, because it's not something I've seen before, is then out of all of that work, which it sounds like you did in a number of different settings, out comes the Beehive Sewing Studio. So what is the story behind that? And right. Did it evolve, you know, quickly? Did you have a eureka moment? How did it happen?
Beehive Sewing is what I would call a focused maker space. So it is an environment where folks can come and use equipment in a shared workspace on a flexible hourly basis. And it's an outgrowth of research that I had done and had been doing over the last several years on co-working spaces. After I transitioned from consulting work and I moved back up to New England, I received a graduate degree in city planning with a focus on economic development. And I studied at that point people who were self-employed, people who worked from home, people who were predominantly telecommuters, and was just really interested in this, how that group of people affects the geography of a place and what resources they create and use. So the idea of shared workspace was something that, you know, that was familiar to me for about the last, I would say, 5 to 6 years or so. And the transition from considering starting a business that focused on providing shared professional office space to shared creative space happened about 3 years ago. And it literally was necessity being the mother of invention. You know, in addition to all of my professional and academic work, et cetera, my husband and I are also makers and creatives, and we have extensive creative hobbies and things that always happened at our dining room table. And I just reached a breaking point in a small living space. We live in a very traditional college town, and we've chosen to live in the center of town in a condo. I just reached a point where I said, I wish I could go to a space that was set up with sewing equipment where I could pay by the hour and not have to clean up and know that the equipment is maintained and, you know, I have everything else that I need. And it just grew from there. I began to do a lot of research on other places that were similar. So there, I found a location in Toronto, a location in London, a location in Berkeley, and then did some local market research. And at that point, I realized how a background in, you know, advocating for a cause, communications, fundraising, strategy, research, economic development, suddenly all of these things, you know, I realized that I could call upon this, you know, fairly wide variety of skills, and I could pour them all into Beehive.
Isn't it amazing when that happens and you can kind of think for a moment that maybe you had this master plan where you knew it all along, and yet that's
precisely
not really the case, but yeah.
Precisely. It's fascinating because I find now that the business has been up and running for just over a year, I find that I'm able to not feel so tracked as, you know, the sewing studio lady, but I'm calling upon my economic development skills, again, my strategic planning skills or my research skills, and, you know, finding that that's coming back into my life and making things very varied, you know, and comprehensive. And that's what I love the most about this sort of entrepreneurial idea, you know, not feeling tracked.
Yeah. And one thing I'm curious about, so the people who come to the Beehive Sewing Studio and Workspace, are they people who are making a living off the work that they do there? Are they people who are hobbyists kind of pursuing a labor of love? Is there a mix?
My objective has always been to ultimately be able to serve people who are making a living on sewing. And I see that as a phase three in developing sort of a textile incubator. Right now, the mix is about 80%, 20%. So 80% are hobbyists, people who would like to make some holiday gifts or make things for their children, who maybe have some basic sewing skills but want to learn a new particular technique. The other 20%, and the researcher in me collects a lot of data about the customers who come in and the things that they're working on. But those other 20% are people who either have existing businesses where they are making garments for people, or they're making a particular product, or people who are trying to develop a business that is textile-based. So they may have a hobby or a gift that they've made in the past, and people have shown interest, and you know, they're realizing or considering if they can scale that up to something that is either going to be a side business or ultimately be their primary form of income. So those folks I work with in a little bit of a different way to make sure that they're getting what they need. I know what they're working on, or, you know, we kind of work that out a little bit differently. But that's a really interesting group of people to me, because I want to see them have access to the right equipment at the right time so they can really build their own businesses.
Right. And what do you see driving the people who come in to work there? Is it about accessing the equipment? Is it about something else? What do you feel they get out of that environment?
So many people feel that they really work better in a focused environment that has some other people there. And at a very, you know, my own armchair psychology of it for some people is that there's something about knowing that someone else is there and almost observing or is aware of what you're doing that makes people feel more focused and less distracted. And, you know, it makes them sort of buckle down and say, okay, I'm spending $11 an hour to be here. I'm going to, you know, if I hit a roadblock, I'm going to push through it. I'm going to make these three gifts for folks, and I'm going to feel good about that, rather than, you know, again, being at home on your own kitchen table, where you might be distracted by the dishes or the cat or the kids or the TV. So it helps people sort of, you know, whether, you know, they feel, you know, if they feel like they could be a little bit distracted, it helps them to know that there's a community of people and that we're all kind of using the space together. The other piece of it is that very essential word, which is space, because many people don't have the space. And I really discourage people, now that I have the studio, I discourage folks from going out and buying a brand new sewing machine, because that's just one small aspect of the craft. You know, it's, if you don't have all of these other ancillary things, including, you know, a free and open, clean space, you know, within which to create something, folks can get frustrated. So a lot of it is about, you know, not just the sewing machine that's sitting on a workstation, but it's about, you know, the cutting tables and the ironing station and, you know, the even the restroom and the refreshment area and the library and, you know, all of those things that feed into the feeling that they have when they're there.
Yeah. You know, that point about sort of having your work be observed or working alongside people is really interesting to me. I'm someone who spent a number of years working from home, and then for the past couple of years I've been back in an office. And I think there really is something to be said about what that does to the experience and the quality of work. I mean, sometimes I even think, gosh, you know, if somebody were to observe me, not that anybody would want this job, like flossing and brushing my teeth, I'm sure I'd do a much better job of it.
It's true. Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that this is my first, you know, truly entrepreneurial experience. You know, I've done private consulting work in the past, but this is the first time time that I've really created a business with, you know, a separate name, a logo, an identity, and it's out there in the world. And so I listen to a number of podcasts and read different articles about entrepreneurship. And one of the things that's often cited as a real challenge for new entrepreneurs is this accountability, and that it can be a very, you know, the process of building your own business on your own can be fairly lonesome. And if you don't feel that you've got some accountability to someone, that's when things begin to, you know, kind of fall off your radar, or, you know, that's where you can sort of have some trouble. So I think it translates well to people who, you know, who want to do creative work and just do that in sort of an accountable setting.
Mm-hmm. You know, as you say, it has been your first entrepreneurial experience. You've had a lot of interesting work experiences. But how has that been in terms of, you know, the risk-taking, the emotional ride of it? Exactly how harrowing has it been, is I think what I'm asking.
It's been extremely harrowing. I think my husband would agree that, you know, many, many nights you wake up at 3 a.m. and sometimes to feel better, you have to research the casters that you're going to put on your work tables because that's, you know, that's on your list. And sometimes you have to rewrite part of your website. And sometimes you just have to, you know, look at Facebook and try to relax and go back to sleep. But it's especially hard as a woman who had a very extensive and successful professional career to take the risk to rely on a partner for, you know, for financial support, for emotional support, you know, for the startup period. So it's been hard for me to give up that identity. And, you know, I couldn't take the risk if I didn't have other irons in the fire, you know. Mm-hmm. But that has really been much more taxing than I think I was prepared for. I think many people have the idea, oh, you open a sewing studio and a workspace, so you get to just sew all day, and you must be, this must be nirvana, you know, and there's a whole other set of challenging things that, you know, that come up. So,
yeah. And that actually does remind me of one more question, if I can sneak it in, which is that I've sometimes talked to people who are actually wary of taking the thing that they love doing, their creative pursuit, and blending that in some way with how they make a living. And they worry that it's going to, in some way, you know, change their relationship to that, whether it's art or writing. And how has that been for you? I mean, you must be so focused on making this work as a business and be a viable operation. Has it cut into your own relationship with sewing and creating?
Such a wonderful question. It has cut into that relationship, but the thing that I really am pleased with, or the thing that I think has helped, is that for me, sewing was one of a wide variety of things that I did before. So it was never the primary creative outlet for me. So I don't feel as much of a sense of loss necessarily with that creative activity as maybe some other folks might, you know, a painter who, you know, is a professional or a photographer or a jewelry maker. So for me, the thing that I discovered early on in the process that I love most, that I love more than sewing and more than knitting and more than baking and more than designing furniture, is the business strategy and, you know, staying up late to develop a programming approach and a marketing strategy and business collateral. And, you know, all of those things are the things that I really, really love doing and enjoy. And to be able to focus on, you know, a creative craft that I love and that I do and that I'm proud of, you know, is wonderful. But I went into it knowing that sewing was one thing that I like to do. So I sort of kept that loss at bay, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I should tell listeners you are talking to me from your closet in Northampton so that we had good sound quality. So I should now let you come out of your closet. But thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It sounds like a fantastic operation. I'm excited to watch it grow.
Well, thank you for all the work that you do. It's so fabulous to just hear these stories from folks, and it's so helpful to people. So thank you for the opportunity.
That wraps up the interview for today. Thanks again very much to my guest, Tess Poe. Thanks also to everyone who's written an essay for WorkStew. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening today. The next episode will be released in 2 weeks, and I hope you'll check it out. In the meantime, please let me know what you thought of the interview by sending an email to kate@workstew.com, by posting a comment on the WorkStew website, or by writing a review for iTunes. Thanks again, and bye for now.